Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, January the 23rd. An absolutely beautiful day here in North Texas, about 40 degrees, but a lot of sunshine, absolutely beautiful day. Today we'll be chatting with our friend Jason Poblete. We're going to be talking about the situation with the U.S. embargo and some talk from the Trump administration that they may be tightening the embargo a little bit, or as I like to say, they're enforcing the embargo. And we'll talk about what happens next. Of course, Jason is also quite a specialist in the embargo, as well as some of the lawsuits regarding property, some of the property lawsuits to against the Cuban government, against some of the property that was confiscated years ago. So we'll talk about that, get some updates on maybe what's happening in that area, and then specifically with the embargo. So let me say hello to our friend Jason. Let's see, Jason. Let me wait for this. Give me a second. Oh, there you are. Okay, you're finally
on. There
we are. There you are. You're finally on. Welcome. It's always a great honor and a great pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me, Steve. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Tell me, it's 40 degrees and very pretty here. What's it like in Virginia?
It's about the same. I mean, we're in a warm streak. We were up in the warm teens yesterday and the day before, so we've been working our way up, and we're back in the upper 30s, 40s today. So it's a nice day here. We're getting ready for a snowstorm on Monday, so we have another one coming.
All right. Okay. Well, those are always
kinda
fun. Having lived
kind of good.
Yeah.
Good to cool off the politicians here in town during a shutdown.
Yeah. That's it. That's right. I spent quite a few years in Maryland in my younger days, so I know I know how snowstorms can happen out that way. Well, Jason, before we get started with the topic, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know we had you on before, but just give us what I like to say, a quick bio.
Well, I'm a Floridian by birth. I was born and raised in Miami, but I'm a Virginian by choice now. I've been living in Virginia now since the early 1990s. I'm practicing law here now for several years now, and been through the government. Spent a few years working in Congress, a few years working at the Republican National Committee, and was very active in politics, state, federal politics for a while, and enjoying law practice right now with my colleagues here in Virginia, right across the river. We're over in Old Town, Alexandria, Virginia, so we're right across the river. We can see D.C., but we're close enough that we can feel it, but we're not in the middle of the belly of the beast, as I tell people. So.
You don't have probably the same traffic problems that they have.
No, we keep it's an easy commute for us. In fact, that's part of the reason why we relocated from D.C. The business from D.C. to Virginia was partly because of the taxes and congestion were just, it's just a lot. So we come over, stay where I live. I live in Virginia and I work in Virginia.
Okay,
and only go to the city when I have to.
Yeah, it's a beautiful state. I've had the pleasure
place.
Of driving. It's just a beautiful state. Well, before we get to the topic, I do want to mention Venezuela. The situation down there right
sure.
now is, to say the least, chaotic. There have been some confrontations and so on. I'm optimistic that the end is near for this corrupt regime. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's part of a process where I think we're seeing U.S. interests first. Ambassador John Bolton, President Trump's national security advisor, when he gave his Troika of Tyranny speech in Miami in November of last year, promised that the politics in the hemisphere were going to be different. And when he spoke about the Troika of Tyranny, of course, he was talking about Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. And they've kept their promise on that. And I think what we're seeing in Venezuela, unfortunately, is a deterioration caused by decades of socialist rule. Of course, you have Cuba meddling. You have China meddling. You have Russia meddling. And it's a complex set of issues. And I think Congress, which is essentially another part of the government now, is taking a more assertive role. And America wants to back those champions of liberty. And I think you're seeing something a little different from what we saw during the Obama administration, which is, Obama, he went down to Latin America and he literally hugged the former dictator Hugo Chavez, This is not the way it's been with the Trump administration. So I think we have to keep an eye on that for the long haul. I think they are only beginning a process to come out of that. So America has the back of the Liberty Defenders, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, let's hope for the best. Let's hope for the best.
That's right.
I think these next few days are going to be complicated. So let's hope for the best. And my biggest concern at times like this, of course, is bloodshed, because the people defending the government have weapons and they'll use them. So you just hope that you don't want a lot of bloodshed. There's already been enough trouble in that wonderful country of Venezuela. Let's talk a little bit about Cuba. Recently, the Trump administration made some announcements, Secretary Pompeo, about what it sounded to me like they meant to enforce the embargo a little bit more, particularly the extension that was made in the 1990s. I can't think of the name of it right now. The act that was passed, and all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank. You know the name of the act.
It's called the Helms-Burton.
That's
law.
Right.
Right.
That's right. I knew that it was called the Cuban Liberation Act, but I couldn't remember the Burton. That's right, Burton Helms, in the 1960s, and that happened, of course, after the shooting of the Brothers to the Rescue in 1996, as I recall. So, what did you make of Secretary Pompeo's remarks that they wanted to enforce that a little bit more? What did you make of that, and have you seen any actual tangible results from that, Jason?
I think it's a positive development in the sense that for the first time probably since the law was enacted, I think you're seeing a serious re-evaluation of how the U.S. will deal with the policy challenges that Cuba poses. And I think it's important to remind your listeners, and you've talked about this on your show before, this all started back during the campaign, really, with President Trump making the promise that he was going to follow through on these changes, but also a key document that was published on June 2017, National Security Presidential Memo Finding Number 5, strengthening the policy of the U.S. toward Cuba. And the president was very clear. He had a directive, and he was instructing his cabinet officials and agency heads to make an assessment of U.S. policy, make sure it's being enforced correctly, and take steps to ensure that U.S. laws are being applied. And I think this is part of that process. And, you know, property rights are pretty much a cornerstone of the policy, and that's why the embargo was initially put in place. I mean, Fidel Castro was in charge of orchestrating the largest ideologically driven, and it's important to remind your readers that it was not just the confiscation of property, but the reasons why they did it. And there's plenty of text of Fidel saying these things. They were going to get rid of people who were not socialists, people who were not with the communist system. He wouldn't use that word communist, of course. He was very careful, but it was aimed at getting rid of capitalists. So if you owned private property or you believed in private property, you were targeted, and it was done on purpose. And in our research, we believe it is the largest ideologically driven confiscation of U.S. property in the Western Hemisphere ever by a foreign power. And, of course, that was a key step that they were using to signal to, back at the time, the Soviet Union, that we want to align ourselves with you, and it was part of a lot of different things. And that these claims haven't been resolved yet. So Americans who are owed billions, and this is gaining interest, by the way, should have been compensated for this. Nobody's saying Cuba, you know, any foreign country wants to expropriate property. You have the right to do that, but you also have an obligation under international law and under national laws, too, to compensate those people for what you've done. And they didn't do
Jason,
that.
Jason, yeah, let me just, for the sake of people who may not be familiar with the history, the embargo came into effect, I think it was under President Kennedy in 61 or 62. And then from 61 or 62 until 1996, when you had the Helms-Burton Act, what actually existed? Because it became a law under Helms-Burton, right? But before that, it was like an executive order. Am I understanding it correctly?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I'm glad you talk about this because it's good to have the context about what Helms-Burton did and didn't do. I mean, the Cuban embargo it dates back, of course, as you correctly say, to the 60s and to different administrations and what have you. But the interesting part of it was that the adjustments that were made, after U.S. diplomatic relations were cut off in 1960, very shortly thereafter, the complete embargo was put in place within 1962, and that began during the Kennedy administration for a whole variety of reasons that we can talk about later. But the point is, from 1962 roughly until the 1990s, you really hadn't had much, it wasn't much change in that law. Now, 1992 was the first time they tried, the U.S. government started to shift the policy a little bit, and they did this with a law called the Cuban Democracy Act. Now, while that law was designed to do two things, kind of update the embargo that was had gone a little, parts of it had gone stale, but it also did something a little different. It also weakened the embargo by opening up telecommunications with Cuba. So it was supposed to have been a carrot and stick framework that Cuba did some positive things and they would be rewarded. And this, the thinking back then was, well, we can ease in telecommunications so families can talk to one another, and then that would help advance the cause of liberty and what have you. The thing was that it also paid fees from those telephone calls to the Cuban government. So that was in 92, and I was not a big supporter of that law, by the way, partly because it did that. It bifurcated the goals, and on the one hand, you had a tough embargo, but then you also kind of started to weaken it. In 1996, which is the law you're talking about now, the Helms-Burton Law, the Cuban Liberty and Democratic Solidarity Act of 1996, was done partially in response to the murder of four Americans, three Americans, a U.S. legal permanent resident, who were murdered by the Cuban regime, by the Air Force. Raul Castro gave the orders, and they shot down two civilian planes on humanitarian missions. And that law, again, did a combination of things. Yes, it did squeeze and update the embargo and create technically more pressure, but it also laid the groundwork for openings. So we've allowed, and this can all be tracked on metrics, the 2000 law then, by the way, before we get to talk about that, the law was authorized and changed again where we allowed the shipment of food and medicine. That started, by the way, in 98. It began under President Bill Clinton, the authorization of shipment of food and medicine, some of it done with, and then we changed the law again in 2000, the Trade Sanctions Reform Act, which made it even easier to send food and medicine to Cuba. So we've had this supposed carrot and stick framework, where you were supposed to use the stick if they were not, you know, if Cuba was not responding to certain benchmarks in the law, and if they were responding, you kind of gave carrot, which means you allowed more trade, you allowed more travel. The problem has been that the law, in my opinion, has never been enforced as Congress intended, and it has never, Helms-Burton has never been fully enforced. And I think that's what you're seeing the Trump administration trying to get a handle on, which is, what have we done right? What have we done wrong, and what do we have to adjust to make sure that American interests are being advanced according to this important law? Because to this day, as you know, the remittance levels to Cuba are in the billions of dollars every year.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Cuba gets billions of dollars from money that the diaspora sends there. Cuba gets hundreds of millions of dollars in fees from airplanes who land in Cuba, mm-hmm. landing fees and cruise fees. So, and the travel. The travel that's envisioned by Helms-Burton is not the travel that we have today. In essence, we have tourism travel to Cuba today. It's supposed to have been more limited travel. So the Trump administration is to be commended in the sense that they are looking and reassessing the policy to protect, going back to our claims again, that, you know, we have to first focus on U.S. national interests, right? So what are we doing to make sure that American citizens whose properties in Cuba were taken from them are being compensated or made whole? And by the way, the law, what it does is it essentially would allow, the Title III section of the law would give these claim holders the right to sue in federal court. People, for example, who are doing, let's say a Brazilian company or a French company or a Spanish company is doing business on a piece of land, let's say a hotel that used to be owned by an American citizen. That's, you know, under U.S. law, that could be trafficking. Although we'll talk to you later why it may not be trafficking. And in theory, you can sue this person, that company, I mean, in U.S. District Court for trafficking because they're engaging in activities on properties that were taken from someone. And America has a right to protect the property rights of its citizens, and this is the way we've decided to do this, which is potentially to allow someone to sue, to say, look, you have a choice to make. You can either go do business in Cuba on a piece of land that used to belong to an American who still owed money, or you can go do business in America and make that. You make the choice, kind of like we do in Iran. Iran, it's the same, almost the same idea with the JCPOA. The Trump administration signaled that companies had a choice to make. You either pick the Iranian market and risk sanction, or pick the U.S. market. And so some companies, if you didn't have an exception, right, you couldn't, you maybe had to leave. So almost the same thing with Cuba. But the takeaway for your listeners is the policy is supposed to be a carrot and stick approach. And Helms-Burton was, in one sense, was supposed to strengthen international sanctions against the Cuban government. But I don't think it's ever been enforced fully. So Title III is one of those many tools that are being explored by the administration to see if they can do certain things to help defend property rights and U.S. interests and what have you.
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad you explained that because, you know, one of the questions that I always had, and I wrote this article recently over at the American Thinker where I was relating my own personal experience having traveled to Mexico many times on business and pleasure and everything else. I even lived in Mexico for a while, that I would go into the duty-free shop at the Mexico City International Airport, and there would be Cuban brand names, cigar brand names, you know, Partagas, H. Upman, those names that used to be in Cuba. And I would look at this and I'd say, wait a minute, this is not, Partagas from Dominican Republic. This is Partagas being marketed by the Cuban government. And I never understood how the Cuban government got away with that. Because it seemed, at least to me, just from a layman's point of view, Jason, that was, you know, an outright violation of property rights. And nobody was enforcing it either. I guess that was my frustration. Was I right in reacting that way, Jason?
Yeah, there are trademark and patent and different types of, you know, of property, and that's part of it. You know, the more famous case that I think you probably heard of is the Bacardi Pernod Ricard Havana Club label. That's been litigated in federal courts before, and it who knows, maybe it could be subject to Title III suits. I have no idea if that will happen. That's for their lawyers to figure out. But that's par for the course with Cuba. And by the way, that's another important takeaway, and I'm glad you mentioned it. Cuba has, socialist Cuba has encouraged the trafficking in patents and trademarks and in property. So they will muddle financial transactions, and sometimes they will not even disclose to potential foreign investors that a piece of property was confiscated from someone. So it's a very high-risk proposition for any foreign investor, and I think that's part of the reason why Cuba has trouble generating interest in foreign investment and loans and what have you, is because laws like Helms-Burton, even though they've been poorly enforced, there's always that cloud that is sitting there. When a foreign investor looks at a potential investment in Cuba, if it's legal for them to do it, well, you know, if they know about it and they're doing their due diligence, they'll figure out, well, what about if this property was taken from someone? In the past, we had the claim holder had no recourse. They couldn't sue them because Title III it's been waived. You know, it's part of the law, but the president can waive its enforcement, so it doesn't become law. And they use national security waivers, and that's very common in sanction laws. If the president makes a determination that it's not in the interest of the U.S. to put that part of the law into effect. But there's other sections of Helms-Burton that, for example, can have a CEO or a board of directors or somebody in the company blocked. They'll lose their visa if the claim holder finds out that a foreigner is trafficking illegally on a piece of land in Cuba that's subject to a claim. And that person, if it's investigated and proven, can lose their visa to come into the U.S. So the law has some bite. I don't think it has been enforced as Congress intended, and that's what I think the Trump administration is assessing. You know, what are the right combination of tools that we need? In fact, today with the Troika of Tyranny speech that National Security Advisor John Bolton delivered in Florida, I think it's put in clear context the challenges in all these three places and how property rights are going to matter, because property rights have been under assault in all three places, and in other countries too in the region, but
right.
especially in those three places. So it's moving product. Interestingly, that comment you talked about from
mm-hmm.
Secretary Pompeo about the 45-day waiver for Helms-Burton Title III, he also mentioned Venezuela and Nicaragua in that 45-day waiver. So
mm-hmm.
that's never happened either. You know, usually these waivers, by the way, for your listeners, happen every 6 months.
Right.
This is the first time ever that they've announced they may make a decision in 45 days.
Jason,
can
I keep you a little bit longer? Because what I thought we could do, I have a question I want to ask you, but I wanted to ask you, let me take a break and then I'll come back.
Sure, glad to do it.
Because what I wanted to do was to talk a little bit about, you know, to someone who may feel that he or she has a claim for property that, let's say, from years ago that was stolen. I was wondering what the process is. So let me take a break, and then when I come back, I want to get into that, into what happens with people who believe that may or may not have claims in Cuba and how to go about it. We're talking to my friend Jason Poblete, but now we're going to hear from my friend Carlos Guedes, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sisiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sisiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlo's schedule on the show information. You can click on that and find out where he's playing around town. Carlos is from Venezuela, and I know how he feels about the politics down there. So I'm sure he and his wife Luisa are hanging on to the news because of everything happening down in Venezuela. Let's get back to our friend Jason. By the way, we have a link to Jason's website on the show information. So if you have any question or any interest in what we're talking about tonight, feel free to contact him by email or at his office. Jason, let's talk a little bit about some of the practical options here for people, you know, who may or may feel that they have a claim or want to file a claim against Cuba. Obviously, they need a specialist like you to do it. But what are some of the considerations that a person would go through? I mean, how far back are any industries exempt? I mean, just give me, let's say, for example, that I had a, I'm going to give you a specific example without getting into names. My uncle used to work for a small manufacturing company in his hometown in Cuba, and that was an American-owned company, and of course that was confiscated, and the guy was never compensated for it. What could his heirs or grandchildren or whatever do this, you know, almost 50 years later, Jason?
Well, I can't give legal advice, of course.
No, I know.
On any of this. So this is just general general observations on these cases. I think it's useful for your listeners to know that there's two types, potentially more, but there's two types of general property claims. One of them, and you mentioned they're U.S.-owned. A lot of the U.S.-owned properties, so there's certified claims, and there are other claims, potential claims. The certified claims are people who were American at the time the properties were confiscated in Cuba, and those American citizens had an opportunity to have their claim reviewed administratively by this commission at the Department of Justice called the Foreign Claims Settlement Commission. And this is a commission that was set up in the 1940s after World War II to adjudicate and review confiscations and expropriations by foreign governments of American citizen land, properties, businesses, homes, what have you, in foreign countries. There have been many programs against many countries. Cuba is one of them, and it's the largest. There's 5,913 certified claims, meaning the commission reviewed 5,900-plus claims, more than that. They reviewed about 6,000-plus. And they found 5,913-plus claims as certifiable. They met the evidentiary standards, and now they're assigned a case number, and now the claim holder has a piece of paper saying they're owed a certain amount of money, and under the law, that also includes interest. So that's one type of claim. They're called certified claims. That program is closed. There's no way to put new claims in there unless Congress authorizes it, and it's rare that they would do something like that. Those claims eventually get settled between negotiations, usually between, in this case, Cuba and the U.S. government, and they settle on a property amount, an amount of money and an interest payment, and then you pay the claimants. Other people who were not Americans at the time the property were taken may or may not have potential action, and it can either, and that's what Title III starts to address, some of that. Title III may allow certain people who are not Americans at the time the properties were taken to bring lawsuits in federal court. I say maybe because there's still some legal. Again, you'd have to sit down and talk with a lawyer about this, but the steps are a little different, and the evidentiary standards not clear from the law as to what would meet, a claim, and then you have to go through some steps, and you have to document. The more documentation you have, the more proof you have that you own something, and you build that record, you increase the odds of you being able to bring an action. Now, Helms-Burton, by the way, does limit the type of lawsuits that would be allowed, what's called trafficking. So just because a company may be legally trafficking on a piece of land in Cuba, you may not be able to bring a lawsuit. So even if you had a certified claim, which those tend to be the stronger cases to bring, if you had one on the proof side, you have a piece of paper that you owed money and it's tied to a piece of land. If that piece of property is being used for travel, being used for communications, telecommunications, if there are people living in, let's say it's a residence, you probably cannot bring a lawsuit under Title III of Helms-Burton. So the type of cases you can bring under Title III, even though I still think it's a powerful tool, you're going to be limited. Plus, there's litigation costs, there's transaction costs, there's discovery challenges. So I think what the Trump administration is doing, which is a positive step, is to take a holistic view of the different mechanisms the president has in Helms-Burton and under the sanction rules to bring Cuba to account in a variety of ways, even though we don't want to litigate. The claimants just want to settle. They don't want to have to go to court and, in essence, fight this again or go after, because you're not suing Cuba, by the way. You're suing a foreign company.
You're
suing a foreign actor for trafficking in the property. Cuba still owes the claim. This is a separate type of legal action. So the president has different tools he can use to enforce the economic embargo of Cuba and bring Cuba to the negotiating table again, like Obama did this backwards. I mean, Obama gave away the store, in my opinion, for talks on property claims. And Obama deserves credit for that. I'll give Obama credit for that much. The Cubans and the Americans did sit down for at least two or three rounds of talks about property claims. But why do you reward them by opening the embassy and everything else they did and taking pictures with the war criminal the way they did and not get something for the claimants, or even figure out a lot of security issues that I think listeners need to be cognizant of? Cuba has, there are other issues on the table right now with the U.S. and Cuba, such as the embassy attacks on U.S. citizens and things that they've done to Americans before, Americans that are being unlawfully detained in Cuba. So there's a lot of complex issues that have to be addressed. We are very glad, though, that property rights are getting more attention, and I do think it's a step in the right direction, because how these claims are settled will impact not just in the Cuba cases, but will impact and send a signal to dictators around the world that they better think twice before they confiscate lands from Americans, because sooner or later Uncle Sam will seek justice. And I think that's a good thing that's happening now.
That's right. Let me ask you one last question, and maybe not as complicated, but what about a Cuban citizen? If you had a home or a business in Cuba and that was confiscated, is there any chance of filing that lawsuit in the United States, or would that have to wait until, let's say, a post-Castro Cuba?
I mean, those are more complex. Under Title III, if you go by the statute, there may be opportunities for some of those cases to make their way into federal court. Usually the general rule is that in cases where you have usually you settle property cases in the country of the national where the taking happened. Of course, in the case of Cuba, you can't, because Cuba is a totalitarian police state, and it's not the property laws are not set up in a way, the legal system is not set up in a way to settle outstanding claims. But Helms Burton starts to address some of that. And let me tell you, there will be some pushback. I think there's going to be, there may be European governments trying to challenge WTO disputes, potentially the extraterritorial impact of lawsuits like those, partly because of what you're saying, because in essence it would be giving a right of action in U.S. federal court to people who are not Americans the time the property was taken. So Helms Burton addresses some of that, and I think it gets us closer, and it'll be interesting to see what the president and his team decide to do and what parts of Title III will be enacted, and then if anyone thinks they have a potential claim under Helms Burton, that they think that they should speak with a lawyer and explore their options to see if they can bring an action in federal court. And you know, the interesting thing about, and final point on general legal observation, is that the jurisprudence since this law was passed in 96, there's a lot of law that has come down the pike, some of it from the Holocaust era, World War II cases. There have been a few interesting at least one Supreme Court decision and some others at the district court level, and that may help people in that basket of potential claims. But it's not an easy case to make, and I think that they should consult with an attorney and make sure that they've taken the steps necessary. You know, the first step in any of this, of course, and we advise this to all our potential clients that we meet with certified or non-certified claims, is collect as much information as you have possible. You know, documentary evidence, of course, is usually preferable. And make an accounting of, you know, testimony, verbal, whatever, from people who knew about the property, and then sit down with a lawyer and or an expert in this space and try and figure out what your options may be. And just because you don't have an option here, by the way, Silvio, you may have an option somewhere else, and there may be, and maybe in Cuba someday. I think this is
something
that Cuba, future Cuba is going to have to deal with this in a transitional justice process. And you know, property rights are essential for any democratic government, and I think Cuba's going to have to deal with this sooner or later, because
you're exactly right, Jason. I want to thank you so much for giving us your time. I know you're a busy man, but I want to thank you very much for giving us your time, helping us understand this complicated topic. But I agree with you that it's nice to see the Trump administration taking a new look at all of this, because I think you're exactly right. I think President Obama sort of gave away the farm. You know, he gave too much, and unfortunately, we got very little. But I want to thank you very much for joining us, and wish you the very best success. And as I said, we have a link to you and the law firm, and we would certainly recommend anyone to talk to you, because I know you're quite a specialist in this area. And prepare yourself for that snowstorm.
We'll be ready for it. And by the way, before I lose you, sorry to interrupt you, but thank you for all you do for the cause of freedom. I listen to your show regularly, and I think you contribute a lot to this important conversation for liberty in the Americas, liberty around the world. And you know, keep it going, because we need your voice in this national discussion.
Well, thank you very much. I was going to say that the good news about, or the bad news is you're going to get a snowstorm. The good news is that baseball season is only a couple months away.
A couple months away. Knock on wood. Yes.
That's right. So
I'll be at Nationals Park probably. If you can't find me in the office, you know where I'll be that time of year. So
great, but it's getting closer. It's getting closer. So that's when you see snow in February, that just means that opening day is
Amen.
A couple of months away. So, Jason, good afternoon, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Have a good rest of the week. Be well.
Thank you so much. Poblete, and we have a link to his website. Check it out. It's a very interesting website, if nothing else. It's one of the most interesting websites. A lot of information about him and his background. But this whole topic of Cuba and property rights, this is something that just has been around for quite some time. And I know that it's of deep interest to me, not so much on a personal level, because I'm not claiming anything, but I have people I know who, had their property stolen, basically. That's what happened. Their property was stolen for no reason whatsoever, pure ideology. And I think at some point, if the Cuban government really wants to get back or wants to have economic relations with the rest of the world, they're going to have to deal with this. This is a bridge they're going to have to cross at some point if they want to have healthy economic relations with countries. Again, we're focusing on Venezuela. We're hoping it all works out. We're praying that it all works out, but it's pretty complicated down there, to say the least. Thanks to my friend Jason. Thank you to you for listening, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.